following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast. Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 218, recorded on Thursday, April 27th, 2017. I am Anessa Moyens, along with Brad Ludwig this evening. Unfortunately, Dave got called into work. Womp womp.
Sad trombone.
No Dave.
Coming up on this episode, icy Earth mass exoplanet is colder than Hoth. Californians believe the truth is out there. New book says the state is the UFO capital of America, with almost 16,000 sightings from 2001 to 2015. And Gucci's models are out of this world. Those stories plus the sighting and our picks and warnings. But before all of that,
what's the question?
If you had to live on a planet that was either negative 100 degrees Fahrenheit or a planet that was 160 degrees Fahrenheit 24 hours a day, what would you choose? Cavite, you would have clothing and housing that could be adapted to either environment.
That's caveat.
Caveat. Cavite.
Playing the part of Dave Nelson this evening, Anessa Orleans. I love you too. All right. So
caveat, caviar.
Fish eggs. So either incredibly cold all the time or incredibly hot all the time. I don't know if it's the Wisconsinite in me, but if it had to be like that 24 hours a day, I think I would prefer the minus 100 Fahrenheit.
And why would you, just because you're from Wisconsin?
Because I've been to Mexico in July, and that was miserable. It was really freaking hot. I was really, really fat gringo in the middle of Mexico, sweating my stuff off. Sweating through the cap I was wearing, and it was, I love Mexico. I enjoyed the trip, and it was just a trip for the day, and I enjoyed the trip to Texas, don't get me wrong, but it was just like, unless it just, I couldn't feel comfortable. I felt just kind of weird and sticky, you know. It was like, ideally, if I took two showers a day, I think I would be okay. It was just one of those things. You can always bundle up and add more clothing and stuff, but you really can't take your skin and fat cells off your body, not without doing permanent damage to yourself. So, I don't know. I personally would go with a negative 100.
Yeah, I don't know. I would probably slip all the time on the ice and break something. I'm surprised that has not happened yet. Knock on wood. I think as far as a chance of survival, you would probably have a better chance of surviving on a cold planet than you would a hot planet. Because so long as you have shelter and clothing, you can always try to do more to, like, bundle up or build a fire or whatever it might be. Dig down, I suppose. But with hot temperatures, if, say, your cooling system fails, then you're pretty much in an oven. I mean, granted, you'd be in a freezer, but still, I think you'd have a better chance. And, fun fact on the internet, from livescience.com.
What?
I know. So most humans will suffer hyperthermia after 10 minutes in extremely humid 140 degree Fahrenheit heat. Death by cold is harder to delimit. A person usually expires when their body temperature drops to 70 degrees, 21 degrees Celsius. But how long this takes to happen depends on how used to the cold a person is and whether a mysterious latent form of hibernation sets in, which has been known to happen. I know, that was kind of interesting. So, yeah, if you just go to the Google and type in life science, what are the limits of human survival? There's an article that pops up, and that I thought that was kind of cool. But yeah, like I said, it's one of those things, like, I would kind of prefer the arid climate just because that's what I grew up in. And I would live in a constant state of fear that I would fall on my butt and break something. So I'd always be in a cast if it was negative 100 or degrees Fahrenheit. But yeah, it's, to me, it's kind of a tough choice. I know life science said that, you know, you'd die quicker in heat than you would in cold, but
yeah, you'd be hard pressed to, because we need water to survive.
Yeah, I'm like, you would get so dehydrated so quickly and your body would overheat, and okay, fine, negative 100 below.
But, you know, the other thing too is nothing would ever grow.
Yeah, well, not that anything would ever grow in negative 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
In the news,
icy Earth mass exoplanet is colder than Hoth. Now, I came across this a little earlier today, and how cold it is blew my mind. Here we go. This story is actually from CNN.com. This newly discovered exoplanet may be Earth's twin in terms of mass and the distance from its host star, but you wouldn't want to visit it. Researchers say it's an ice ball. In Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, the best of those movies, Princess Leia, Luke Skywalker, and the rest of the rebels toughed it out on Hoth, an icy world, until they were discovered by Imperial forces. But OGLE 216BLG1195LB, why don't they have better names for these things? Like Bob's Planet, that would be good.
That'd be confusing, because you'd have a lot of Bob's Planets.
Well, yeah, there could be that. Is even less hospitable. While it is covered in ice at around minus 400 degrees Fahrenheit, it is actually much, much colder than Hoth. This is from a postdoctoral fellow at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And they're the lead author of a study detailing the planet in Astrophysical Journal of Letters. Svartvald is the name of the doctor. It's hard to imagine any life surviving in such an environment. Not humans or Tauntauns, anyway. 13,000 light years away from us, the planet orbits a star 10,000 times fainter than our sun. The researchers believe that the star is either a brown dwarf or an ultra-cool dwarf. You can tell by the sunglasses, which is at the low end of the spectrum for stars. But they don't have a way of knowing that right now. Even though the planet is well out of our reach, the researchers were able to confirm the planet and its mass and the distance to the star with data gathered using the ground-based Korea Microlensing Telescope Network and the Spitzer Space Telescope. They used a technique called microlensing, which has enabled astronomers to find the most distant exoplanets orbiting stars thousands of light years away. To date, this is the lowest mass planet found through microlensing. This discovery provides more evidence that planets are not only very common, but also very diverse, Svartvald said. They are able to form in strange environments very different from what we're accustomed to on Earth. That's why researchers are looking forward to the launch of WFIRST, NASA's Wide Field infrared survey telescope in the 2020s. Svartvold even anticipates that WFIRST will allow for the discovery of exomoons, among other smaller objects, and a more complete census of exoplanets and how they're formed. Now, all the exoplanets that we have discovered to date are much bigger than Earth. So, once WFIRST gets out there, we're going to be finding more planets that are our size, our density of Earth, or lower. I mean, exomoons, that's kind of cool. So, yeah, look for that in the 2020s.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
Now it's time to just shoot the breeze.
Pew, pew, pew.
So, this weekend, Saturday, which would be Saturday the 29th of April, it's Tabletop Gaming Day. It's Board Gaming Day, so we're going to be hanging out with a bunch of folks and playing all sorts of games, and I can assure you that there will be space-based games that are played. So, I know that's our big plans. Anything else that we're doing?
Not really. I mean, there might be yard work depending on the weather, but the weather's been kind of meh lately. We got a little bit of snow today, but not as much as other places.
It's almost May.
Yeah.
It's going to be May. And we had snow, and not much of it, granted, but I know there was snow out in Colorado as well.
Yeah. Ooh, this past weekend, I know we talked about it last week, but this past weekend was the world's largest trivia contest.
That's right.
And we ended up placing 35th with like 11,000 something points.
Yep. Out of the 396 teams this year, a little less than past years, but I think one year we played, there were 430 some teams. Mm. So, but we were still in the top 10%. So
I think we did pretty good.
We'll call that a win of sorts. So, yeah, and that's 54 hours straight. It's a trivia marathon for 54 hours, and it's a fundraiser for the college radio station, our local university, at least in our area, not the UW-Madison, but this is the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. They're mostly known for their education program, their forestry,
their environmental program
is top notch.
And I think, if I recall, they work with the Elm Fork peeps in Denton, which is part of UNT. So, because when I mentioned Wausau, one of the individuals was like, oh, is that near Stevens Point? Because we do work with UWSB. I'm like, that's awesome. And then, what else? Speech and auditory.
Yep, speech and language.
Stuff. Pathology.
Yeah.
Therapies.
Which Alex was a part of for a period of time. And, so that's...
If you're interested in attending, you can go to uwsp.edu. I feel like now it's become an advert for UWSB.
We've gone this far.
We might as well promote them, you know. Anyway, I've heard good things about UWSB. Stevens Point seems like a nice place. And trivia is a lot of fun. So there you go.
Absolutely.
Ta-da! Do you think these clothes are out of this world is a little too on the nose as a tagline for Gucci's new campaign? Gucci, contact this person if interested. And that person would be the person who wrote the article from TheVerge.com. The campaign, which Dazed notes is probably for Gucci's upcoming autumn/winter 17 line, stars aliens and androids from faraway places in the galaxy, like the fictional planet Zoff, a water planet, and, quote, unknown. Personally, I'm a big fan of the unknown, so if you go to Gucci's Instagram, check out the unknown alien. He's hilarious. I think he's hilarious. So anyway, last week, the fashion house started posting videos on Instagram featuring different aliens, okay, possibly models dressed as aliens, standing in front of green screens. Each video is captioned with the alien's age and planet of origin, while the alien in question acts out a brief scene with an unseen producer. Shipley, age 7, who was born in a construction facility, says, "I'm not like you humans. For me, happiness is more of a matter of differential calculus." That was the android, if you couldn't guess. The posts are hashtagged, hashtag Gucci and beyond, but aside from that, there's little in the way of actual information about what Gucci is doing. I didn't even find it useful that all the aliens spoke English, despite the fact that this robot, one of the robots, claims to know 6 million dialects. But I mean, of course they're going to make it convenient, and perhaps there's a TARDIS nearby, so, you know, it's like translating for everybody. I don't really know. Anyway. But this is not the first offbeat Instagram campaign for Gucci. Last month, the company paired writers and artists and asked them to make Gucci-themed Instagram memes for a campaign called hashtag TFWGucci. An old-school luxury brand selling clothes via memes and aliens is unusual, but the juxtaposition of highbrow and lowbrow works, especially on Instagram, where your feed is probably both aspirational and familiar. Maybe Gucci used to be your very rich neighbor, but now it's just trying to be your weird friend too. So, anyway, that, like I said, it's from The Verge. I thought it was entertaining. I've never really been like, ooh, I gotta go buy Gucci. I think I owned a pair of Gucci frames once, and that was just because they looked okay on my face. So, that and the insurance covered it, so win! So yeah, even if you aren't into brand names, I just thought that this campaign was kind of entertaining, so Gucci, I believe, I'm kind of surprised, I'm sure it's really easy to find, but it's like at Gucci on Instagrams. So just do a search for Gucci. It's got the little verified check mark. I don't know that I would wear any of the clothes that's depicted for their potential fall line. Another favorite alien would be the Sea Beast, age 178, from Water Planet. Grrr. Why must I always be the one to rescue these visitors who go out of their depths? Rawr. So, yeah, you should check it out.
It was pretty ridiculous to watch.
So, there you go. Fashion on the alien invasion.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
We've all suspected, but now we know that it's true because it's on the internets and it comes to us from dailymail.co.uk, so you know it's legit. Californians believe the truth is out there. New book says the state is the UFO capital of America, with almost 16,000 sightings from 2001 to 2015. Californians have reported more close encounters with the third kind than any other state in the U.S., new research has shown. A recently published book found that of the more than 120,000 reports of unidentified objects seen from 2001 to 2015, 16,000 of those sightings were originated in the Golden State. For those of you outside of the U.S., that's California. The authors of the book, UFO Sightings Desk Reference... That sounds scientific.
It does.
Have suggested that the warm weather could have something to do with it. Then Florida must be like number two. Huh. Okay. Anyways, people spend more time outside, which provides them with more chances to spot a UFO. Since 1969, this is a quote here, the government has claimed no interest in the subject, and the press and media either ignore or ridicule any mention of UFOs, reads the book's synopsis. Continuing, yet citizen scientists... and non-governmental organizations have continued to this day the research into this important subject. This book seeks to make the hardest data accessible to the general public, as well as other UFO researchers. Although California reigns supreme in sightings, the book highlights that people have claimed to have spotted alien spacecraft all over the U.S. We have found that UFOs were sighted in every county in the United States, explains UFO Sightings Desk Reference co-author Cheryl Costa, who is a former military technician and aerospace analyst. Every county had at least one sighting sometime in the past 15 years. We think a great deal of it has to do with California's weather. Costa explained that people spend a lot of time outdoors because of the mild climate, which gives them more opportunity to see the UFOs. From 2001 to 2015, Californians reported 15,836 sightings, and a majority of them were in the Bay Area, which would be Marin County, San Francisco County, San Mateo County, and in Alameda County and Santa Clara counties. So, let's see, of those, San Francisco had 327 out of that 15,836, and Santa Clara kind of led the pack there with 569. That's crazy. Costa found that Los Angeles County in California had more sightings than 40 other U.S. states combined. Although the Costas, that's Cheryl and her husband, collected 121,036 eyewitness reports from the two combined national databases. So, again, that came to us from the Daily Mail. Ooh. That's a whole lot of freaking sightings.
Yep.
And that's over a 15-year period, just to make sure we're clear on that point. But... That's intense.
Indeed.
That is intense.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
It is time for the sightings. Now, this one is going to have a visual component to it, so check us out on YouTube. You can find us at youtube.com/galacticnetcasts, and you will be able to see this picture. The sighting is very short in text. This was sent to MUFON. I'm sorry,
MUFON,
as Mulder would say. This sighting took place 4 days ago from this moment that we're recording this on April the 27th. This sighting happened on April 23rd at 10 a.m. 10:22. This would be Manhattan, so that would have been Eastern time, in the Eastern time zone, which would have been 11:22 our time here in Central, where we're at. Okay, this is very brief and to the point. This took place in Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, okay? Just to make sure that we're clear on that particular point. And here's what the person wrote. Like I said, short and to the point. I'm going to read this exactly as it's written. I was taking picture of the building from the Ground Zero Memorial and recorded three images in rapid succession. One image displays an object. Now, I'm only going to show you the one picture that has the actual object in question here. Okay, I'm going to pull this up. And I'm going to share it with you guys. I'm going to transfer over. All right, so you are now looking at my monitor. Now, if you're checking us out on YouTube, I'm not familiar with what building this is, but this is in the area of the Twin Tower Memorial. So I wonder if that's that. Oh, that must be a part of the... I don't know enough of what they did at the memorial site. I'm a bad American. I apologize. Anyways, so this is downtown Manhattan. And if you are checking out on YouTube, I'm kind of circling the spot where this craft is pictured. And it looks like kind of a teardrop that is like horizontal. So the rounded part would be, I'm assuming it looked, the other two pictures don't show a craft. It's like a before, here's the craft, and after. You don't see the craft in the before and after. You don't even see like it's moving really quickly. You're not seeing that kind of blur to it. You just get this. So I thought that this was the important thing to show you. I'm going to blow this up here. Excuse me, if I can. Hang on. There we go. So here it is. It almost looks like a slightly flattened pigeon. It has a longer tail and a pointed sort of a nose to it. But... yeah, that's the particular picture that this person took at 10:22 a.m. Eastern time in downtown Manhattan.
It's a bird.
It kind of, well, you know, normally, and it would really depend on the shutter speed, but you'd see feet or something, because the way the coloring is here, that darker thing would be what I would assume to be the wing. Because typically the wings are darker than the body.
Right.
For a lighter colored bird like this. Because it's basically, if you're not checking this out on YouTube, this thing is mostly like grayish in color, probably white if direct light hits it. But the nose and part of the side and the tail of the craft are a much darker color. I wouldn't say black, but pretty close to it. And... like I said, you're not seeing a blur to this particular shot. So either this person took a picture at a very high shutter speed, which...
Well, it's daylight, so the shutter's not going to be open for very long anyway.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true.
I really do think it's a bird. It's just the angle at which we are viewing the bird. And you talked about not being able to see any feet. Typically, they tuck their feet in anyway when they fly. Or have them back, I guess. So, and I guess depending on the angle, it might, yeah. you It's a fat pigeon. So the belly's probably hiding its feet. I don't know. That's what I think.
Sure.
Folks can take a look and see if they agree, disagree, have another theory, idea, hypothesis.
And if you do, you can contact us at alien@gncasts.com. Or you can go to gncasts.com/contact and you can find all the different ways to get a hold of us. Heck, you could even call us at our number and leave a message telling us you think that we're wrong. That's cool, too. So there you go. My sighting is from downtown Manhattan just a few days ago. Today is Thursday. This would have taken place on Sunday. So, yes, this is an incredibly recent sighting. And we'll have a link in the show notes as well for you to take a look at that. And you'll be able to click the link and see the picture of what we're talking about as well if you're not checking us out on YouTube. But I do recommend you check us out on YouTube. That's youtube.com/galacticnetcasts.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the Else Nerds. Now, what are the Else Nerds? Well, it's myself and Corey Scott, along with our producers, Beatmaster and Evan Rockety, as we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little heart, whether it be comic books, movies, TV shows, video games, cell phones, the moments that we're walking down the street and a person says hi. It doesn't matter. We talk about everything, and you can find it at elsenerds.com.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making... I was going to do Dave's picks and warnings, picks and warnings. Do, 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 picks and warnings. So my pick, I've been feeling kind of reminiscent as of late. So, and Amazon has Unsolved Mysteries available for streaming with for Prime members. So I've been watching a lot of Unsolved Mysteries, making my way through the rounds. And so I came across season 1, episode 10. I don't believe it has a title, and I don't remember what UD stands for, but this episode includes Witch Hunt and UD. Oh, update. Derp. So there's a witch hunt and an update. Update, friends to the end from a previous episode. Missing time, parts 1 and 2, and stroke amnesia and update. So, the part that I'm going to talk about is missing time. And I thought this was really kind of interesting. They mostly focus on one particular individual whose name is Bob Matthews. And back in the 1960s, he had just joined the military and was preparing for his first tour of duty, and he arrived in front of a market via bus in Cape Cod, and he used a payphone to contact the base to let him know, hey, I'm in town now, and they're like, awesome, we'll send someone to get you, be there in 5, and they went there in 5, and he wasn't there, and in his mind, he's standing there hanging out, and no one ever shows up. He sees something, well, he doesn't really remember at the time, but, you know, he's waiting, and he's like, man, where are they at? Let me give him another call, and his superiors are asking, where did you go? We went there, like, 2 hours ago, and you weren't there, and he's like, I've been here the whole time, and eventually, he ends up going under hypnotherapy. And they uncover that he had witnessed some lights in the sky, and he talked about his experience with being abducted by aliens, which is what happened in this particular case of missing time. And what really prompted him to research this further and go under hypnosis was he was actually, you know, years later, he was shopping at a convenience store or market or somewhere and sees a book. That book is a book that was written about missing time, and it had an alien, a stereotypical gray alien on the cover. And he was like, this is what I saw. Like, I'm not crazy. So anyway, it kind of talks about that. It talks about a support group for people that have experienced missing time. And the Missing Time book is written by a gentleman named Bud Hopkins back in 1987. So I do recommend that you give this a watch. I thought it was interesting. Brad, what did you think?
No, it was interesting. The way that they filmed the reenactment, you really got the sense that it was a continuous event for this particular person. And when they, you know, mentioned that he called the base again, and they're like, we had somebody over there not too long ago and you weren't there, and now we're considering you AWOL. Yeah. So don't leave. We're coming for you. And then he got interrogated for the longest time.
And he thought he was going through some sort of test or training.
Hazing ritual or something.
Yeah, thing. And he's like, I don't know what you guys are talking about, but I was there the whole time. So, yeah, no, I thought it was really interesting. So whether or not you like or have ever watched Unsolved Mysteries, if you do happen to have Amazon Prime, I do recommend at least watching season 1, episode 10. And if you don't want to watch the whole thing, you can fast forward probably about halfway through because it's towards the tail end of the episode. So, yeah. Unsolved Mysteries. Cheesy music and all.
My family used to watch that religiously.
I did too.
Back in the 80s, we used to watch it religiously.
No, I watched that show quite a bit with my dad in particular. My mom would sometimes watch it, but it was always me and my dad. We would sit there and he would watch Unsolved Mysteries along with Cops and other shows, wrestling.
Now that Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be released on the 5th of May, I've been going back through and watching the teaser trailers and the full-length trailer and all the trailers for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I'm really excited for this. And I keep going back and looking through to see if there are more little comic book nerd tidbits and tips of the hat. And the one character, your quote-unquote bad guy, who is not Nebula. I just read an article, too, that in the original version of the film, Nebula died. And while they were shooting the film, they kept, like, sending rewrites to Karen Gillan. And she's like, towards the end, she's like, I don't even know what's happening anymore. You tell me where to stand, what to say, and I will do that. So her character obviously lived, and now she's back in this Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So I was looking for trying to figure out a little bit more about who the bad guy is. It's a character called Her. Or it was kind of simplified to Her. She is a Kismet or Paragon or Her or Aisha.
On the Lego box, she's Aisha.
Yeah. It depends on who is writing her and what was going on. And in the comics, she was a artificially created powerful being. Their first version that they did was him, who is Adam Warlock. Now, Adam Warlock, there was talk from the first movie, there was this huge cocoon that the Collector had. And that cocoon looked a lot like the one that that Adam Warlock was born out of. So there was talk that, you know, Adam Warlock would show up in the next movie. And that might be, and there was actually speculation that Adam Warlock would have been Peter Quill's dad in the movie universe. But they obviously have taken a different direction, and I'm not spoiling anything because it's been all over the internets and James Gunn has already mentioned this, that it's Ego the Living Planet that is Peter Quill's dad. So Her was a... People called her Her because Warlock, Adam Warlock, was originally called Him, if that makes sense. So people went, oh, he called himself Him, so we'll call this, you know, manufactured super being Her. And things kind of got weird. So anyways, that's who that golden-faced person that... in the extended, in the full trailer, when Rocket says, you know, people say your planet is a bunch of douchebags or something like that. He's talking about Her and her people. So, and she's made a number of appearances in comics. I couldn't even begin to tell you how many, but. Yeah, she's sort of a big deal to a certain degree in Marvel Comics. She's a real character that has existed. So, and she's being portrayed by Elizabeth Debicki, who is a... She was born in France, and she's Australian. So, anyways, what does that mean for the pick? Yeah, I've just been obsessed with Guardians of the Galaxy, so that's really where my head's been at, and I'm really... kind of excited to see what they're going to do, as a lot of people are, and wondering if tomorrow I'm going to go on Amazon and be able to get the special bag of Doritos that has a chip in it which has the entire soundtrack for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Nobody knows how much the bag of Doritos is going to be. It looks like it's a family size bag.
Oh.
From like a... kind of a hazy picture that I saw. So it might be a $17 bag of Doritos. Who knows? But I do want to at least check it out and see what that's all about. So yeah, my head's been totally into Guardians of the Galaxy. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is where my head is at, and that is my pick, as well as Anessa's Unsolved Mysteries Season 1 Episode 10 with the servicemen with the missing time.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
Well, I think we can probably wrap things up, eh?
I think so, eh?
That's our tribute to Canada. Anyways,
and Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin, or no. Hey, that's going to do it for this particular edition of the Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. If you'd like to read more about the stories we covered on this episode, click the links in the show notes. We'd like to thank Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. It's a song called Alien Syndrome, and you can find it at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol. It's Monkey with... Andy Warhol's last name. Just put the two together, Monkey Warhol, and you're there. Monkey Warhol also has a new EP out, and it's called EP4. I'm guessing it might be his fourth EP. Don't quote me on that. And you can find it at monkeywarhol.bandcamp.com/album/EP4, or you could just go to monkeywarhol.bandcamp.com, and I'm sure that they will be able to point you in the right direction. Also, we want to give a shout of thanks to Retvard von Durenberg, a composer from Germany who has done our closing song called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net. That's Caravel with a C. Also, thanks to Ben Olson. Thank you, Ben. For recording our disclaimer audio at the start of this episode. You can find out more about Ben Olson at benolson.com. That's Ben with a B. No, I'm kidding. Of course it's with a B. Just checking to see if you're still paying attention after reading all that stuff. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye. Bye. Screw you, final thought.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
We could have left it at that.
And done.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCASTS.com.